day.
That was not in the Transformers movie.
It's the best I could do.
I don't know what's going on with this thing over here.
Are you mad that you can't open it?
Yeah, keep working on it, little kid. You got this.
Tasty stickers.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes.
I also don't know where his hand is.
Why don't we have any scratch and sniff stickers?
We should totally do that.
We should totally do that.
Scratch well, I mean,
what would you put? As,
yeah.
I could call it like Vanilla Crusade. Yeah. Chrism. Sacred Chrism.
I smell like Chrism right now still.
What? What
is you it
from?
Baptism?
Because I was the MC for the confirmations today.
Oh, so wicked cool.
Yes.
Is that how you know what our gift is from Santa?
Yes. Ah. And we're back.
Hey, welcome back to the Dave's Vault podcast. I am Father Stephen Felicia. That is a baby.
That's a baby.
That's a baby.
We have Colby Zerba here.
Oh, but wait, who are you?
I am Parker.
That's Colby Zerba talking.
No.
The year-old boy.
That would be really impressive.
He's a prodigy. This is his father. Go ahead. Identify yourselves, my fine people.
So I'm Parker Zerba, and this is...
I'm Maria Zerba.
My wife. And Colby is here. I think this is the first time a baby has been on the Dave's Vault podcast.
It is.
He's helping. He's our tech.
He's very
see the cable. Yeah, that's a cable. Good job.
I'm the first non-Brazilian cartoon character to travel through time. Correction, Homer. You're the second. Oh, gee whiz, Mr. Peabody. Quiet, you. Anyway, sorry. That was a reference to the 90s. And
anyway,
we're back.
Anyway, don't let Colby, as much as he's willing to munch on the Ninja Turtle and packets of stickers, don't let him become the cat from Christmas Vacation. With the cable.
What happened to the cat?
What did happen?
He ate the cable under the couch.
Oh, that's right.
Exploded?
Yes.
Probably. We don't know. The
Anyway, Christmas
He's
is on
got
the mind.
Teeth, but they're probably not that good yet.
No.
He's got teeth. I believe that. He'll have teeth when he grows up, too, because of the good formation of his good parents.
He's doing great, honestly. Taking the toes off of Leonardo with Chomper over there. That's good. Oh. This is the baby, my brothers and sisters, who was kissed by Pope Francis on the most recent pilgrimage.
This is the baby that you didn't kidnap to Rome.
That's right. We
you took the parents, too.
I took the parents, too. When that story was told, it was just me and the baby.
We took a baby and their parents and his parents.
Where did you get the child? You know how this is.
So, very good. Hey, thank you guys for coming on the show today.
Yeah,
this is awesome. Thanks for having us.
That's so very cool.
It is a joy.
I'm glad it worked out after all the back and forth about times and everything.
Yeah, that was a bit confusing, but I'm glad that we got it ironed out.
Worked out real good, like.
So. How do we know each other again? Just for the people in the out there in Internetville.
You yelled at me one time because I mispronounced St. Augustine's name.
Did I seriously do that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how we first met?
You, of all people, correcting someone's pronunciation.
Ukraine. I was in a mood. I'm always in a mood. It was a good mood.
I think of the relationships here, I think I've known Maria the longest.
Longer than Parker?
We knew each other in high school.
Did we know each other in high school?
I was
didn't know
freshman you,
so you
were
and
you
a
were a senior.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then it was quickly afterwards. Then
It was probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's all right if he wants to climb on the table. I don't care.
Except he'll get into the mics. And
Step all right. into the mic.
Very good.
It's good. No.
I don't think he can fit his mouth around the mic, so.
No. I
mean, nom.
Should be good.
Yeah.
These little knobby things.
Tonight he dines on turtle soup.
Well, what are we? Turtle soup and pizza, because of course. So what is it we're saying we're doing here?
Well, no, I have we fully introduced? I knew you and guys in high school.
No, okay. I guess there's more. Let's do that then. Let's do that. Parker, who are you?
So
where do you come from?
What are you doing here?
I'm a native of Fort Wayne.
We
all are, I believe.
Yeah, actually.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Aside from Colby, who's a native of Garrett.
Yes,
I guess that's true.
Technically, I guess. But Garrett's kind of like a little outpost of Fort Wayne.
That's
anyway,
true.
So.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of our
I might get arrested for saying that. I don't know.
By who? The Garrett police? Do we have a broad list?
You'll know they're coming.
They're very bored up there.
They are. The first few weeks that I was living up there before we got married, Maria would be driving home and she got stopped. Okay, wait.
I
how
got
many
pulled
times?
Over three times.
Oh my gosh!
In 3 months
for the silliest
wow. for
the
like
silliest
not
thing.
Stopping completely at a stop sign for Whoa. Having a headlight out, and then the last time was because my tire was touching the white line at a stop light, and it has to be your vehicle has to be completely behind the white
you
line.
You are joking.
Yeah. Not no, joking.
Not
joking.
Gate.
They are very bored.
Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
That's right. Pew, pew. Not a ticket. Any of those.
That's no. Awesome.
Oh, dude, have you heard all the way through Lux Eterna, the new Metallica single that just dropped?
I haven't had a chance to listen to it all the way.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I listened to it five times.
Anyway, we're jumping off the track here.
Sorry. I mean, let's go
we're
back.
Really good at that.
How do we know each other?
But no, but what? So go through some of your upbringing and tell some of your interesting tidbits of the past.
Interesting tidbits of the past. Okay, so yeah, born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1996 on January 13th. If you nice. Really wanted to
is that
know,
a feast day,
St. Hilary.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Poitiers. Very good.
Yeah. So, and I went to Carroll High School, graduated in 2014. So we're both public school kids. We both went to Carroll.
Yep.
After graduating high school, well, I guess I should say I got pretty involved at the youth group over at St. Vincent's during my high school years. It's okay, Colby. You'll be fine. Just play with Bumblebee.
They won't send you to public school.
No, we will not.
He knows. He knows that that's
he's
out
heard
there
things
somewhere. So, yeah, I got involved in the youth group there. That was where I met
which
Dan.
Is where you met. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we met on my first ever encounter with Dan, I think, was on one of their retreats that they had. And then after I graduated high school, I joined the Franciscan Friars Minor. So I was part of them for 4 years. My name was Brother Rufino Maria. I think you've had some other people that were part of our group.
Yeah.
Chris Lucius.
We had Chris Lucius, and we also had Father Lee Allen.
That's right, Father Lee Allen.
Yes. Is that is that all the former friars we've had on?
I think so.
Have you had Father Paulo on?
I don't think yet.
Not yet. Okay. That should be on our to-do list.
Okay. We should.
Yeah.
Ask his story.
So there's a group of us that are still around Fort Wayne that were part of the Franciscans for many of us for quite a while. And when they disbanded back in, I think that was early 2020. That was
right
when COVID was happening.
Right.
They decided to disband. And so I left in 2018, in the summer of 2018. From there, I eventually, I met Maria. Well, we had known each other our whole lives, mm-hmm. Pretty much. She
how?
Was good friends with my younger sister.
Oh, whoa. Claire, right?
Claire, yes.
Whoa. Recently married.
Recently married.
Yes, that's congratulations right. to her. That's right. Great.
Yes, and beautiful. Maria also, her younger sister was recently married as yeah. well.
That's oh, right. wow, a lot of that going
yeah.
around.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had two family weddings and Italy all within the span of 30 days.
Are yeah. you serious?
Yes. No big deal. Handled it like a pro.
It was it was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome. So, yeah, we kind of reconnected after I left the Franciscans. And I left on very good terms, obviously. And when I left, I knew that God was kind of asking me to discern the vocation to marriage. Marie and I reconnected, and it was kind of from there, 2 years or so of dating and engagement. Is that right?
2 years of dating, 1 year of engagement.
1 year of engagement. And then we were married in January of 2021. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I get confused on the years there.
You know what, though? You guys had it especially challenging with, like, all the COVIDities happening all around.
It was great.
Those 2 years were much in my mind, so I wouldn't blame you.
Yeah, we planned a whole wedding, and then the week of had to cancel the reception. Still was able to get married, but...
Oy.
Yeah.
That was rough.
I remember that rough period when you guys were having to shift gears a lot and...
Yeah. And buying a house. And
yeah.
It was not a fun year.
When we were trying to buy a house, we went through... Gosh, probably 10 different houses, and I would say 4 or 5 of them, somebody bought it while we were in it.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that's how bad...
Housing was weird back
the
then.
The market was.
It hasn't gotten too much better, as I understand it.
I think it's a little better, right. But now because the interest rates are much higher.
Right.
So people aren't.
That's what makes it worse. Yeah.
Ugh. Sympathy gosh. To
it's
you
It's easier
guys.
To get a house, but it's more expensive.
Maria, how do you know my friend, Daniel Kale?
Through the Life Teen program at St. Vincent's.
Oh, you're all St. Vincent kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Like, you guys were coming through when I was in seminary, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that was the connection. I would be home on breaks and things and do stuff with the youth group at St. Vincent's and run into characters like the Tills. Becca Stump and made good friends there. That's right. Good.
Well, no, praise God.
So there you go.
All right, so now that we are all properly introduced, and apparently I yelled at Maria once, and I don't know, I met you as...
Not that surprised. He was just talking to you. That's the difference. Yeah. You know?
And apparently I yelled at Brother... No, I never yelled at Brother Rufino, but I met you as brother, right?
You probably did.
Okay, gotcha.
I met a lot of people during that time. No, that's kind of a haze.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah. So people will come up to me and they're like, "Do I know you from somewhere?" And I'm like, "Well, I used to be a Franciscan." And they're like, "Oh, that's what it's from."
Oh, wow.
So
So I do the short hair and the beard thing. Uh-huh. And do you know how many times people have asked me in the past year, how like, "You used to be a friar? You used to be a friar, right?"
Yeah. 11.
I'm like, "No." it's probably about that. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
yes.
So I mean it's a lot of people who think, you know, "Oh, this guy's a cleric," and I know there are some guys who went from friar to priest in our diocese. Right. So he must be one of them.
That's right.
Like, no, it wasn't
all me. Squares are rectangles. Yeah. But not all rectangles are squares.
That's exactly it.
For people
I'm
who
definitely
don't know,
a square.
For people who don't know, the friars that we had here, we would do the full tonsure, which is basically your whole head is shaved.
Mm-hmm. You never go
and then
full tonsure.
We would grow. Yes.
Oh, brother.
Come on.
Speak for yourself there.
Hey, it's coming in naturally. This is God's will. God wills
natural
this.
Tonsure.
That's it. Oh, man.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, man.
And then okay. We would grow our beards out. We wouldn't trim them. And
oh, that's so right. Yeah.
It was lots of fun.
It was good looking.
Man, the artist formerly known as Brother Joseph. I mean, I remember sometimes, man, like whiskers that were like super overachievers.
Oh, man.
That would be like, yes. Like 4 or 5 inches right. Longer than the rest of the beard, sticking out in crazy directions.
Yeah.
You guys were the real deal.
You learn a lot about yourself when you just let your beard grow and you don't trim it. You learn a lot about yourself.
Kind of like getting punched in the face.
Yeah, no, that's the thing I say from time to time.
Yeah, you do.
And it's true. It's true.
I'm not sure I would know.
Have you ever been punched in the face?
I have. Yes.
Can you? Do you want to give details?
It's probably.
Did you know this, Maria?
Not.
I did. We have had this discussion.
Okay. It was a locker room incident. I was a swimmer in high school.
Take notes, Dan.
And somebody, there was a dispute, and I sometimes will get. I'm a phlegmatic, and uh-huh. And with phlegmatics, oftentimes the anger it's. It doesn't come out very much, but when
long
it does,
it's a long
it's a very long fuse.
Vesuvius.
When it does, it's like a quick eruption.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so
I think Josh must be a phlegmatic, my brother.
Has he hit you?
Long fuse.
Oh. Gotcha.
But when he gets angry, he's like
so he
boiling.
Could also he could also be a melancholic, but melancholics
oh,
also
could be.
Have long fuses.
Okay. All right.
Everybody knows everybody. Come on, it's what happened.
So I'm in there in the locker room and there was some sort of a dispute and I got pretty angry and I shoved this we were actually best friends. I shoved it up against
and I like this guy
against the locker, and he punched me in the face, and so it was good.
What
it
did
was,
you learn?
I learned that getting punched in the face is a very disorienting experience.
Yes, it
and
is.
That I probably don't want to erupt in anger like that again.
Oh, awesome! Yeah. Then you so, then it was worth it.
It was quite. I learned a lot from that experience. Oh, that's
good.
For sure.
Good, praise God.
Well, very good.
Oh.
But all right, so. Our friend Parker here, and so this is the thing, is Parker has his own show, and because Parker has his own show and wants to do a collaboration, because he and his wife are unified, they come as a package deal, and Colby too.
That's right.
Speaking
and
of, can
Colby
I have
too?
One of his snacks?
Yeah.
Thanks. Oh my gosh.
Go ahead, keep talking.
You're like a kid with Cheerios in the back pew.
I don't know what these are.
What are they called?
White cheddar cheese puffs?
That's They're right. good.
I bet. Okay.
They are pretty good.
My mother used to give me these when I was in the back of church.
There's no... There's no caloric value to them at all, except for maybe the salt.
It's like eating styrofoam and salt.
It is, yes.
Delicious.
Colby, you lucky son of a...
American cuisine at its finest. Anyway, what's the show called, Mr. Zerba?
So my podcast is called Catholicism in the Car, and basically it's a podcast.
It's such a great title. It's such a great title.
Yeah, it's very alliterative.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
But it's also out of necessity, because I really, you know, with a family and a kid and a full-time job, you know, it's difficult to have time to sit down and do a podcast like this. And I'm constantly learning, right? I'm constantly learning, particularly about the faith, philosophy, theology, history. They're really my loves. Just learning more and more about the Catholic faith. And, awesome. It got to a point where I was like, I need an outlet
yeah.
to talk about these things.
Yeah.
And And initially it was actually just to document for myself. And then I had I was like, you know what the heck? Let's just throw them online and see what happens.
So nice. How have things been going for you?
It's actually been going really well. It's a small group, you know, I think of people that listen to the podcast, probably about 20 or 30 people consistently. Nice. But
it's a different, it's kind of a niche.
It's
kind of a niche show.
It is a very niche show. Yes. I talk very much from a philosophical point of view mm-hmm. on a lot of things. So kind of, almost you could say like an armchair, I take an armchair philosophy outlook on okay. almost everything that okay. we discuss. And that's also partially by necessity because I'm making this podcast in my car. Mm-hmm. And so I have no access to notes or anything like that while I'm going. So it's pretty much just what I've internalized, what I've memorized, what I've read, and being able to synthesize that for people. So we've done quite a lot of topics. I have, this week, well, come out the 120th episode. And I do about three a week. They're very short usually.
Yeah. It's kind of tidbit.
It's tidbits.
It's like right. it's like a quick deep dive.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
It's usually 10 to 20 minutes. I've had some longer ones, some half an hour. And then actually this morning I recorded an interview with a guy and that episode was an hour long. It was a YouTube interview. Mm,
nice.
Which was a lot of fun, actually. There are some amazing software out there that allows you to do live streaming interviews.
Nice.
There's That's great. A thing called StreamYard. And it...
Shout out to StreamYard.
It's really amazing. It's free. And they allow you to integrate into your YouTube channel. And you just send the guest a link and they click on it. It brings them up. You can bring them into the stream, and then everything's right there.
Very cool. Dan, take
it's
notes.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
we may think about that kind of thing in the future. We'll see. There's some other things in the work behind the scenes with the Dave's Fault podcast, so we'll see we'll see if things move that direction someday. But anyway.
Today is not that day.
Today is not that day. There may be a day when the Dave's Fault podcast is seen on every YouTube channel known to man, but it is not this day. Thank you, Aragorn.
This day we just record in the cave again.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, so great. thanks for introducing your show. Where can people find your show?
You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on pretty much any podcast player out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I don't know what else there is. There's so many.
Everything. Anywhere you can find podcasts.
You just kind of everywhere. And then
check the Google
I have
machine.
A website, www.catholicisminthecar.com.
Oh, nice.
And you can see everything there. I have a support page there and some, you know, pretty much any link you could ever want to any of my content. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So we'll try to put that in the description for this episode.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Let's get you some more listeners. That'd be great. Cool. Well, you know, we challenge our people who come on the show with bringing the topic forward. Now, you had a bunch of different possible ideas.
I did.
And I'll admit, I didn't have even a chance to read through all the different possibilities. So did you land on one that you wanted
we did.
To,
yes, we
to
did.
Kind of?
Okay. Thank God for his wife.
Yes. Anyways. Maria came up with the landing idea, and I think it'll be a good one. So we're going to talk about recovering fasting and feasting.
Ooh, perfect for Advent season.
That's right.
I love it. Yes. I love it. Yes. I just preached on that yesterday morning to my kids, my students for the all school mass. Oh,
good.
So
good.
Yeah, at least in part, so it works out.
Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Babies, they are fun.
Babies.
He's doing good, actually. He's doing really super good.
There you go.
But no, fasting and feasting. We were actually talking about this over dinner one night. I was over at your guys' place for whatever reason.
I think we were, yeah.
Yeah, and like, so this has been actually like a topic of conversation in your house, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. That was kind of one of the reasons I think Maria brought it up was because it's something that we've, that comes up in conversation fairly often.
Really?
Between us mm-hmm. and between just people we have over. Because, you know, regulating particularly the food that comes into your life, you know, there's a three times a day at least we eat and who knows how many snacks we have a day. You know,
Hail America.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. this is when I knew that we had decided that you guys would come on the show. I know previously, I think Maria, you had proposed the possibility of talking at some point about the domestic church or proposed that an idea as an idea to us on something to talk about. And I think that's an idea that continues to develop in the conversations that Father Stephen and I have on and off the air, but and also in different ways with some of our other groups of friends, and just like continuing to think about that. I think the domestic church has absolutely kind of fallen off the edge as far as like a common understanding of it and the common practice of it.
There's no real like they'll give you marriage prep, right? But that's basically that's basically that's NFP prep is pretty much all that it is for the most part.
We might circle back to
in our experience at least. And
but this topic ties into maybe some aspect, some facet of the domestic church, especially.
Oh, of course,
you can. Especially with you being on the show, you're considering it from your own point of view.
That's right.
You know, being the small family that you are, and continuing to grow, and trying to understand how to do that as a husband and father.
To jump to like families, that's what we mean when we say the domestic church. The like, did you guys have like big celebrations in your house? I mean, we always had like birthdays or anytime we would go over to grandma's house and stuff, so she'd have her lasagna and things like that. But I mean, like as far as like religiously connected. I mean, there's always Easter and Christmas. What?
I mean, not too much. There were a lot of us kids, so.
Maria's one of 10.
Righteous.
There's a lot of us in the house.
But you never had like a, I don't know, St. Joseph feast or anything like that?
Not really.
No. Okay. Do you now?
I think there was a.
Oh, yes, yes. That's actually part of our. Part of our discussion, if we want to talk about
let's go.
Our last St. Joseph feast day.
Wait a minute. Your last? You've done this more than once?
Our most recent St. Joseph.
So St. Joseph's feast day is during Lent, right?
Yes. Yes.
Or at least one of them. There's
most
there's,
of the time.
It's one of the little oases
yes,
exactly. of the Lenten season, yeah.
and so for this last Lent, we adopted kind of the old Byzantine Catholic Lent. So like right now, all that's required for Lent is fasting on Ash Wednesday, Good Friday, and abstaining from meat of all Fridays of the year, but also during Lent. But then the Byzantine, you basically abstain from all animal products and byproducts and olive oil.
And olive oil?
Yes. Because they believe that the olive tree is the tree of life, and so you abstain from the tree of life until
that
Easter.
That must be murder for the Greeks.
It's murder for anybody.
Well, and what's interesting, at one point in the Western Rite,
how much you cook with olive oil? I mean, it's
How do you eat vegetables unless you saute them in olive oil?
Ranch dressing.
Yeah, right. Because it just turns
ranch
into
mush. Dairy.
Oh!
Yeah. It was rough.
Yep. It's intense.
But in the middle of that was St. Joseph's feast day.
Oh, thank God.
See, thank God for oases, right?
It really is.
Yeah. So we were able to invite a bunch of friends and family over, and we really celebrated St. Joseph because it was the first time, and it was like 3 weeks into Lent that we were able to have eggs or meat, and it was...
Okay, now hang on a sec. I want to just back this train up real quick. What possessed you to do like the Eastern Rite style of Lent?
So at that time, we were doing a lot of research into the Eastern Rites, just looking at them, trying to learn about them.
Just the two of you?
The two of us, yeah, pretty much. And
that's awesome.
Because we got connected with Father David Mainza down at St. Andrew's. Goodness gracious, what's the name?
They're the Ukrainian Orthodox, or Ukrainian Catholic Mission group. Yeah.
Right. It's old St. Andrew's, which actually used to be the church that the friars were at,
right.
The Franciscan friars. So it's actually pretty beautiful. Whenever I go back there, the Poor Sisters of St. Clair are still there in their monastery. But they'll have an Eastern Rite liturgy every Sunday, almost every Sunday. Father's part of the National Guard, I believe, and so he's gone.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Certain...
He's a busy guy.
He is a very busy man. Yeah,
he has kids too, as I recall, right?
He does. Yep. Because those who don't know Eastern.
Oh,
Catholics,
yeah,
like... Eastern Rite Catholics. their clergy can be married,
right?
And
except for their bishops, right?
Bishops except for their bishops,
yeah, right. Bishops can be.
So, right. So you met them, or you met him, and you guys are like, "What do you do for Lent?" And he's like, "I give up everything."
Yeah, well, no.
So this is like prior to 1911, and the Latin Rite has had a similar thing: no animal products and no alcohol. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a monk, you can drink beer.
it's nice to write the rules.
You like fast until 3 p.m.
Different understanding
you get
of what
one
beer
meal
was.
A day. Like there, it was both sides, East and West, had a much stricter Lent right. for the Great Fast prior to 1911, and so we were looking into that, and we just thought like, hey, why not like go back to only 110 years ago, what everyone was doing, and try that for Lent.
And it was an amazing experience. It really was. Mm-hmm. Like even I was telling, we were talking about this the other night, and I was like, that was the hardest Lent I've ever done. You know,
weren't you a monk?
Yes, that's the point. That's the point. That was the hardest Lent I have ever done. And, you know, even when I was a friar, there was no Lent that topped that one.
Wow.
In my book.
Wow.
Because, you know, you're basically, you're vegan, and then you also can't have olive oil.
And you ever tried to make bread without eggs, milk, or oil?
I've never tried to make bread.
How do you? Well, there's your first problem. You know? But I mean, it's what do you do? Like, just as a microcosm of this whole thing, what do you do to make bread?
Sawdust.
That stuff.
I bet you it's sawdust.
It's very dry, basically. Very bland. It's basically just like flour, water, and salt.
Ugh.
And yeah. It's not. Hang not in there. Good.
Tastes like sailboat fuel.
I packed away all those Lenten recipes to only break out next Lent. I try not to revisit that hard time of our lives.
We don't talk about that. No. The hard Lent.
It was beautiful, but we wanted to stay where it is, you know, in the Lenten period. But
sure.
I think that the one of the beautiful things about this topic is because we're not only trying to focus on fasting, right? We're also trying to focus on reviving true feasting in the church's life. And you need both, because if you're totally focused on fasting all the time, it'll break you.
Well, yeah.
And people don't have a very good concept of what it means to feast.
Particularly in this country.
Particularly in this country, right. Because
we're in a state of perpetual feasting.
Right. Some may say we're – although I would say that's not feasting.
It's not real feasting.
That's gorging.
Sure.
It's gorging yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You can't eat Donatello. Constant gorging. Feast.
Constant feast of Ninja Turtles.
He's chewing on his staff.
It's okay.
Is that what that is, a staff?
It's a bow staff.
Bow staff.
He's pretty good with the bow staff.
He is. He's got mad skills. He's also the genius of them all. That – I digress. When we're back, so you guys were like, "Here's this oasis." What did you do?
Oh, for St. Joseph.
For St. Joseph.
St. Joseph.
Oh yeah, we had a whole bunch of people over. I think you guys were there.
No, because it was like a weird. It was like Saturday or something.
I think I had mass.
Oh, busy maybe doing it was. Priest okay. things.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was doing priestly things.
But we had a bunch of friends and family over, and we had sausage Caribbean biscuits and pancakes and eggs. And
we made like a giant breakfast for dinner.
Yeah.
It was like a pre-Easter.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. It was a feast day.
Yeah, it was.
You know, it's in the middle of Lent, and so if you're really if you're taking your Lent as seriously as you can, right, it makes those times where you get the relief so much more meaningful. Right, and that was something that I was really blessed with at my time in the friars, was being able to get into the rhythm of the liturgical seasons, to do things like and many Catholics don't know about these, but the octaves after the three main solemnities of Pentecost, Easter, and Christmas.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting one? Is it just those three?
Those are the major ones. Those
Pentecost major ones, is gone now.
Sorry, you've been stuck with the table mic. Can you make sure to stay a little closer to the mic?
Sorry,
yeah, it's okay.
So a lot of people don't know about those octaves, which are the 8 days after those said solemnities, right, of Christmas, Easter, and Pentecost.
And each day is equivalent in rank to the actual feast of Christmas or Easter.
Right.
What have you.
And so, you know, probably related to that, one thing that we've also been doing is for Christmas, in order to really live the octave, we have made it to where Colby, for his presence, will kind of give him like his a main present on Christmas Day.
He'll get three on Christmas Day.
Three on Christmas Day. Yep.
And then a one present for each day of the octave.
Oh, that's awesome!
That's right.
Yeah,
that's a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like that.
Ooh, you're gonna try and stick with that?
Does it?
I mean, it's only 12 presents. I mean, I'm sure kids get a lot.
It's interesting. That kind of fits with the Judaic practice of Hanukkah a little bit.
It does. You're right. I never really thought
about
that.
An interesting way to. Yeah, it's a typological in a certain sense. Yeah. Interesting.
You didn't see it until Jesus Christ broke open the Word.
Christ the priest.
There we go.
Here I am.
There we go. Yeah.
And a t-shirt and shorts.
But anyway, but St. Joseph, his feast day is a solemnity. So like, again, like because we've been really bad at this for the last, I don't know, decades, unknown decades, like what does that mean to have something as equivalent rank in Sunday? And I know that some people are tracking. In fact, it's fairly common knowledge now to my knowledge, but like people know that they can give up their Lenten penance on Sundays because Sunday is a solemnity. Or if they don't know, that's the reason why. That's the reason why. It's it's like its own special, let's have a party because Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And that's huge. And then we have all these other feast days, which are not necessarily days of obligation. And one of those is St. Joseph's Day. And I never knew that as a kid. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
No.
And I was desperate to, like, now I bust out the gold vestments when we have the Feast of St. Joseph.
Nice.
Because you're just like, yeah,
that is
like,
awesome.
Let's go nuts about the second greatest saint of all time.
Yeah.
And where do we go from there? So you guys did one fun time during Easter. Was there any other breaks or Easter during Lent? Any other breaks?
I'm trying to recall back.
The whole process was a constant discernment because I was still nursing at the time, and pregnant and nursing women are dispensed from any obligation to fast. Yeah, because you're taking care of another human being. Like,
right.
It's not just about
That's
yourself.
Huge.
Yeah. Passing nutrients from one to the other.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I needed to make sure I was taking care of myself. So there were some things that I lessened on in that. And those who are manual labor was lessened for that. But I forget the original question and why I kind of diverted.
Other
breaks.
Oh, other breaks.
Other
so
oases.
Weekends were lesser. You could, for Saturdays and Sundays, you could have dairy and animal byproducts and wine. So there was that. I don't remember if there were any other main feast days.
I think
we might have lessened up on St. Patrick's, but not fully. So we brought back dairy and animal byproducts, but not meat.
Well, that is a good question. So, we were talking about a nice solemnity, but what about feast days,
like Annunciation?
Yeah,
yeah. So we one of the things when we were going through this whole process was realizing that the church before the code of canon law, the initial code of canon law was promulgated in the
1911.
Yeah. So. The church had something like
36
holy days of obligation, which were also solemnities.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so what we decided was that we were going to try to really celebrate all those 36 days of obligation.
Oh, I love you
guys. In any way that we could.
That's awesome.
It's like St. Andrew's feast day, November 30th, just passed, and we're still eating Thanksgiving leftovers. And so we took a break from the leftovers and had... I really like breakfast for dinner, so we had sausage, gravy, and biscuits again.
Oh, hence IHOP. That's right.
Yeah. So we took a break from our leftovers to celebrate that feast day. So each of apostles, 12 apostles, were a holy day of obligation. And then they were the nine that are still present today, and then the 3 days after Pentecost, 3 days after Christmas, 3 days after Easter, St. Joseph's, all the Marian ones that... Yes, I don't know how many that equals up to, but it equals up to 36.
That's awesome.
Big feast days.
That's right. Yeah. And so you get this beautiful ebb and flow of the liturgical year.
Yeah.
Doing the penance on the days that require penance and doing the feasting on the days that require feasting.
Mm.
And it brings you into that rhythm of the church. And one of the things, I'm not able to pray it very often now, but when I was a friar praying the Liturgy of the Hours all the time, is meant to bring you into that sort of rhythm, the flow of the church's liturgical life, right?
Your life becomes very religious.
It does, yes. And so in this way, celebrating those feasts and then also subsequently doing all the fasting as well, increasing that, then you're able to kind of feel that ebb and flow of the liturgical year.
Mm.
And it's incredibly, incredibly beautiful.
Yeah. I think it's really easy for us as priests to live a really liturgical life because, we're saying Mass every day. We're engaging with the breviary every day. Mm-hmm. But maybe something that not every priest is always completely good at is this fasting and feasting thing. We sort of keep
Do you want me to tell jokes? Father, what a waste.
I mean, yeah, there you go, right? Yeah.
Because my belt doesn't go around my waist anymore.
Yeah. It can be said in two ways.
It can be said in two ways. No, there it is. You live in a wealthy country and in a country that could feed this planet, I don't know, five times over if we didn't have all the warlords and all the other pain that comes with living in a broken universe. And guess what's easily accessible? And guess what
the good laity love to do. They love to feed their priests because it's like the one thing you can do that is like, oh, yeah, I love my priest. I gave him like 96 cookies.
And you're like, that's a good
thanks for loving me. Love me less. So love me less.
Trying to kill me.
Yeah, yeah.
We want more of you to love.
The pie, did you was it just you that had pie?
Yeah, it was just me that had pie.
Did you have pie?
And the cheese puffs.
No, and the cheese puffs.
I was the only one who had pie.
I mean, the pie was an example of that, right?
I'm
like, please eat all the pie because we will have four more tomorrow.
And I think there was another one up there, wasn't there?
Like I said. Yeah. Like I said. And it's very good. I mean, of course, the people have got are great, but also
there's a lot.
There's a lot.
And, there's
only three of us in the rectory, and we have the school is 800 kids. And expand that out to families. Think about it.
Right.
Proportionality wise, you know.
But again, and that's not, again, I'm not trying to say don't send us anything or anything like that. It's kind of a tricky game here, which is the one nice thing that everybody likes is food in this country. Like it used to be we could bond over, you know, the American flag. Well, you can't do that anymore. It used to be that you could bond over, like, you know, sports. Well, you can't really do that anymore. And now it's like, you know, well, at least we can still talk about food. At least there's the Food Network. And or there was. And you're like, okay. And I appreciate it. I truly do. But it's very hard to remain disciplined. And at the same time, like, also, I have to eat this food. Like, remember how you were told to eat or children would starve in some other nation, which doesn't make any sense?
Yeah, but it puts a little psychosis in your youth growing up. And
I turned out all right.
Yeah, totally.
He laughed maniacally.
Yeah.
There's this interesting dynamic of, like, the priest. And I would say in some ways, like, the priest is the worst at fasting.
Hmm.
And he
that's interesting.
He doesn't, there's not a culture of exercise in the American priesthood. There just isn't.
No.
There is.
Well, how could you barely have time to tie your shoes, much less
have a podcast or do any of the other stuff they actually pay me to do. And so, like, there's no culture of exercise. There is very little time just in general. And a lot of my socializing I do around meals, and which is necessary because that's when human beings socialize. And so if I'm going to be with the people and I can't live in your house, and I can't, I need to.
When the persecution comes, we'll think about that again.
There we go. Yes.
Don't tell them that.
Yeah, they're already going to be
kill checking. Me now before they bring me there. Oh, you're probably here for the persecution. No, your wife parked an inch over the white line.
That's it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. But like, I would say, and whereas, like, you look at America, and America has a lot of problems. America has a serious obesity problem, really does. Mm-hmm. You know, what we consider to be just overweight, we would have considered obese 50 years ago.
Right.
And then, like, there is – and then there's a huge cult of exercise too. Like, if you become very, very, very secular, like, and you've got to worship something. A lot of people worship their bodies. And again, I'm not opposed to exercise. I'm kind of a fan of it. But like, it becomes an absolute game of, you know, like, how do I – become Adonis, and they're really good at fasting. Credit where credit's due. Again, it's kind of playing off that thing we were chatting about here. You know, the children of the world are wiser in the things of the world, than the children of light are wiser in the things of light. I want to. This is my God, and so I will do whatever it takes. I will spend as much money as it takes to get the right equipment, the right food. You know, I will drink nothing but Fairlife in proper quantities. And Fairlife, the finest.
Not the chocolate milk Fairlife.
No. The one that came from the cow that, you know, been.
Just start talking again. Go ahead.
I was.
Go back.
Okay.
Do it. What are we talking about?
And they work at it. Okay, cool. But they have a better concept of fasting than the priest. And so if they are, and this is a problem priests have always had. Sorry to lament in front of the laity, but if we are like the standard bearers of like what it means to be virtuous and good, theoretically, people can tell a lot about you by how you appear.
Mm-hmm. And again, and like you can get into arguments about like, how do I appear? Well, do I wear a cassock? Do I wear a clerical shirt? Do I wear plain clothes? Do I wear a clown suit to mass? Anyways, sorry.
You're really hitting all the marks there, Cheech.
I want to make sure I get everything covered. And but you can tell a lot. But also, how much do I weigh? What am I clean shaven, or is my beard relatively well kept if I have a beard? Is my hair crazy long? And sometimes it gets that way. My tonsure doesn't cover all my sins. We should get a drum down here.
We should.
Anyway,
it sounds like a drum.
Oh, it's awesome.
We have one. We don't need one. Woo.
He's fine. He's got a good guardian angel. Anyways, the baby is fine.
He is. That was not his head.
He's just having fun.
Maybe we should do a video on this, so people know.
Yes. What's going on?
But no, so anyways, after all that long rant of Father Stephen Felicia, just to circle back to it, I don't feel like I'm the standard bearer of what it means to lead a virtuous, fully pious life. Now, again, I'd like to think I keep some regular fasts and things like that, but a huge part of my fasting regime was destroyed last year, or this year, I should say, when COVID has basically ended in Indiana, all intents and purposes, mm-hmm. and now everybody wants to have dinner with you, which is great.
Totally true.
And guess what? I'd better. These are my people, and I better be with them. But guess what that means? It means that my normal regime of proper fasting is gone.
It's just gone.
So, like, what does that also mean? Well, it means I need to lift more. But when do I have the time? Because
So it's this constant back and forth between, you know.
So really, like, what this boils down to circle now, to bring it back to your point, brother.
Yeah.
If I had a freaking culture of feast and fast, my Catholic people would play the same game I need to stay alive.
Right. Yes, right.
That's true. And but I think this is one of those things where we start to realize the two-way street of the problem, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like priests need to help their people establish the domestic church in their life so that they can do the proper feasting and fasting. Maybe not, you know, the complete, you know, pre-1910 Byzantine whatever
you talked about.
But something, anything. I mean, along the lines of liturgical worship.
It's like, do anything.
Well, because we do nothing right now, you know. But if we can help to establish that at least as a desire, then we can start to see that happening between good people, right? I mean, it's happening in your household. What's to say that won't inspire other friends of yours to do something similar when they establish their own households?
And that's the goal,
right?
Yeah.
And so then it perpetuates, and we build real culture around a real cultus.
Right, exactly.
So,
you know, if you're in that situation where you're going to a family's house and they're offering you dinner on a Friday and it's, you know, steak and, you know, mashed potatoes and who knows what else, and you're going to, you know, be filled to the brim, right?
Right.
I think we need to think as a church in general. This is just a general point on how to communicate properly to our laity the truths of the faith, particularly in this instance, the truth of the necessity for temperance, right?
Yeah.
In a way that they can receive, right? And that's the tricky part, isn't it? Like, because so often, you know, we're afraid of telling the truths that need to be told for the sake of losing people or offending people.
Yeah, I just did my best.
Right.
Anyway, but so along those lines then, because, you know, not to unnecessarily bring it to a conclusion, but we are at 43 minutes, just to let you know.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's the linchpin question here is, what would be, in your estimation, considering your own experience with establishing this in your own household, what would be important first steps? And I'm talking like really preliminary first steps for people who like the idea of an actual Lenten fast and not just giving up chocolate for Lent,
right,
you know, is foreign to them. What is something that they can do to change their mindset and to start changing habits to bring about this greater level of temperance and the fasting and feasting back and forth, the liturgical living of that?
That's a really, really good question.
But what did you do? I mean, like,
what did we do?
Is just coming from study and from a desire to love Jesus, or is it?
We talked about it. We watched some YouTube videos explaining it, and we talked about it some more. And even throughout the whole Lent, we were continuously discerning how we were fasting and feasting. And it, I don't know. You just talk about it is the first step. And we started with Fridays in Lent and then Fridays throughout the whole year. And then it just kind of builds from there. You take it one step at a time.
Mm. And I think there's almost a blanket solution that can be very useful. And that's cultivating a desire in the people for authenticity.
Mm.
And that reaches out into every aspect of our life as Christians, right? It reaches out into the aspect of the liturgy. It reaches out into the aspect of our song and how we, and then likewise into how we then, how we receive the food that we are given and, you know, whether that's in a way of fasting or whether that's in a way of true feasting.
Mm-hmm.
I think fostering that desire for authenticity to find something that is real and true, and true authenticity necessitates suffering, mm-hmm. right? In the same way that true love necessitates suffering.
Wow.
And so, if we can somehow cultivate in the people that desire, and it may be through many different avenues. It may be through the liturgy. It may be through the music. It may be through, you know, just living your daily life, right, in a way that is more and more authentic, as to what true Catholic authenticity would be. I think that can go a long way.
I love the word authenticity. I think that's so important, and I think that's something that's especially resonates with the current age.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are so used to the plastic, they can see it from a mile away.
Mm.
And especially like the millennial generation and thereafter, they can smell inauthenticity.
Yes.
I mean, again, from a mile away. So, you know, hypothetical situation. I become pastor of St. Joe's in Garrett next year. And I'm just kidding.
That's our home parish.
But really, you know, what do I do considering the possibility of me being a new pastor sometime in the next few years? What is the first thing that I can do as a pastor to help that authenticity to land, and also especially for the direction of your feast fast back and forth?
So I think as a pastor, one of the main things you could do is educating the people from the pulpit on exactly what the church's mind is on the subject of fasting and feasting. Like, for example, in the Universal Church in canon law, I think it's canon 1251, if I'm not mistaken.
Nice.
Are you listening, Father David Violi?
Yeah.
quiz time.
Request or the obligation for abstinence on Fridays, where you would not eat meat on Fridays, that obligation is still enforced and mm-hmm. enforced for the Universal Church. Now, the USCCB in America has made like a further alteration there, which canon law does say like that the
that's allowed.
Yeah, that's allowed, right? For there not to be an abstinence of meat on Fridays, but the USCCB does say in there very clearly, and you can look, if you look up fasting USCCB guidelines on Google, you can find the document. They do say in there very clearly that they do not wish for the people to altogether abandon this practice of abstaining from meat on Fridays. It's their desire that people will do it out of love, not out of obligation.
Right.
And I think that is, in general, a lot of the way that the church has been moving over the past 50 years, and I think that is actually a good thing, moving away from obligating the faithful towards certain things. But
I might contest that. I might contest that.
And that's a fair contestation, if that's a word.
Yeah, it is. But from the perspective of, you know, think about your family, and there are rules in a family, and they're not because there are hoops to jump through or red tape to cut through, but because the parents love their children and they want them to thrive, and these rules are important for their thriving. I mean, you have your boy. I'm sure there are rules about things he can and can't do, even if he doesn't understand them right now. And the same thing was true with you guys when you were growing up, I'm sure. I mean, just knowing your families, right? So I think that's the same thing that like Holy Mother Church should be able to do for her children.
Sure.
That's just my perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, So to follow the rule is actually good for your soul, as you guys are finding out in the context of your own practice of it. Now, you are approaching it from the perspective of love, of real care for Holy Mother Church and for her people and for God and all the rest, and her saints, especially when you feast on their days. But I think you then realize, like, no, it would actually be a good thing if the church maybe did a little bit more of mandating this stuff for the sake of
reviving that desire amongst the people, because that's what the rules are for. That's what canon law is for, is to cultivate within the people a deeper desire for Christ and the things of Christ, right?
Well, the final canon is the salvation of souls, right? I mean, it's all about that.
Yeah. So
that's the whole point.
The whole question of obligating or not, set it to the side, but the fact being that the what is asked of, namely abstaining from meat on Fridays, things of that nature, fasting, and then subsequently feasting, we need to reinstitute that into our people's lives in as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because think about it like this: in seminaries, right, and in religious formation, you'll have your human formation, and then you'll have your spiritual formation. And your human formation is there to cultivate the natural virtues of prudence, temperance, fortitude, and justice. Your spiritual formation is there to cultivate the theological virtues of faith, hope, and love. And the virtue of temperance, which is the one that we would primarily be looking at on the question of fasting and feasting, is a necessary virtue to cultivate in order to then fully be receptive to receiving the sanctifying grace of God in those theological virtues of faith, hope, and love, right? So if we are able to cultivate that virtue of temperance, which temperance is an easy way to put it, is having control over your life into what things you intake and to how you...
It's connected to the gift of self-control.
Right.
Yeah.
And so... if we're able to cultivate in people that natural virtue, it will lead them to that greater reception of theological virtues further on.
Yeah.
And fasting and feasting really is, I would say, the way that the church tries to cultivate that virtue of temperance.
Whoa. I don't think I've ever thought about it in those terms before, but that's really spot on.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the track there is fasting and feasting is an assistance to the gift of, or to growing in the virtue of temperance, and temperance assists in faith, hope, and love.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
As one of the natural virtues.
Yes.
Wow. Beautiful. Okay. I like that track. I like that track a lot. Good. So some resources. You said you watched some YouTube videos and stuff. Who were you listening to start this?
So I'll make a caveat here, because the initial video that we watched was actually by Taylor Marshall, I wouldn't necessarily be a proponent of his work all the time.
All the things, yeah.
Yeah.
He has some good things.
He does. But on other things, I think he goes off the rails.
He's a little zealous.
Too far.
Words of a zealous man as opposed to words of a wise man.
Right. So... the initial video that we watched was from him. I believe it was on the subject of like fasting and how the fast was before 1911. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it gave some historical context there, which it was actually really good and helpful. So you could check that video out. Let's see. If you type in Byzantine Rite fast, you should be able to find the regulations for the Byzantine Rites Lenten fast, and that can be helpful for a lot of people, because even today, it is still much more strenuous than what's required for the Western Rite.
Right. I mean, I imagine there are resources out there for what the West would have done as far as their own fast, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
If you want to sort of stick to your own tradition,
there are quite a lot of articles out there on how the fast was done previous to 1911.
Okay. And they're very similar in the point of like abstaining from meat and animal byproducts and fasting for a portion of the day.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
And I want to make a caveat here that the reason why Pius X in 1911, I think it was Pius X, right?
That sounds right.
One of the reasons why the church was kind of moving towards relaxing the the rules for fasting. And this is also what Pius XII did in 1951 with the relaxation of the pre-Mass fast. Instead of it being from midnight until reception of Holy Communion, he said it would be an hour before.
He made it an hour? I thought it was – didn't it have a jump from all day, from midnight to receiving – down to 3 hours.
You know, maybe he was 3 hours.
I think it was the 3 hours. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it was a reduction for sure.
Right. And the reason he, in the encyclical that he wrote on that, he gives a lot of his reasoning for it. And it's actually, I think, very pastoral because of the way that the working man, the way that the schedules of people's lives had changed over the course of the 20th century. The
Industrial going Revolution
from,
and all right, that.
Right. Going from a much more agrarian society, right? And where things are a lot more kind of fluid with time schedules and things like that. It was much easier for people to go to Mass before they would eat breakfast, you know.
Yeah.
But with the way that the world was beginning to work with after the post-industrial revolution, that wasn't really possible. And he wanted to cultivate the ability for people to go to daily Mass much more in a much easier way. And so, you know, keeping those things in mind, that was kind of why the church lessened these things and that's a good thing. We can still hope for the revival of, I think, that ideal.
The ideal from a perspective of approaching it in love.
Right.
Rather than mandatory.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Cool.
So.
Beautiful. Well, that's a great conclusion. Let's end the episode while Father Stephen is still over playing with Colby. He's away from the microphone.
Thank you, Father.
No, I think that's good. Any final remarks on those topics?
I don't think so.
I do want to mention, I think even before Lent and watching that YouTube video, we had listened to a podcast actually the audio of the encyclical Casti Canubi, which is about marriage and like the importance of like the parents as the head of the household and domestic church. And it talks like there's some like killer lines about like talking to the women. Why would you want to lower yourself to be equal with men? And like how education, both in the spiritual and like actual academic realm, is the primary responsibility of the parents. And that really lit the fire underneath us. We've got a young boy. He was only a couple months old at the time. Like, how are we going to start now? Because if we start when he's 5 or 6, like, we're already going to be 5 years behind of where we need to start to be able to live the faith in his life for him, and instill the love of the Lord for him. And so that really, I would definitely encourage listening to that as a couple or even by yourself, to kind of instill that responsibility in you that like, this is your job. Mm. You took this on when you made those vows of marriage and when you brought life into the world. It is your job to educate your children, to get your spouse and your children to heaven, and what are you going to do about it?
Or even just go back and pray with the vows that you did make at your marriage
day. Right.
Sure. Listening to those words of consent, listening to all the – yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I would – if people want to be able to find the document Casti Canubi, it was by Pope Pius XI. I think it was one of the most beautiful – encyclicals ever written, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And it's pretty long. I think it's, if you're going to listen to it, it was about 2 hours.
I think it was closer to three. It was maybe, like three segments.
Maybe it was. Mm-hmm. But you can find there's a really well done and narrated audiobook on Catholic culture audiobooks through catholicculture.org. Mm-hmm. And they have a number of papal encyclicals on there that are made into audiobooks. But that one in particular, if you want to cultivate the domestic church, I would listen or read that. And I think it could be very, very helpful.
Cool. Beautiful. Well, that's awesome. Hey, thank you guys for coming on the show. This has been a great conversation.
It's been awesome.
Everything from domestic church through feasting and fasting and everything. It's beautiful, beautiful to be able to have you on and share that. And share your own lives with us too. That's one of the things we want to do on the show, is continue to share the lives of Catholics who are thriving in Catholic life and culture.
Please, God.
I think so. I mean, of course, with all the challenges, right?
Yeah.
We have brother priests on a lot, and we talk about these and various other things that we're striving and continuing to strive to thrive, right?
Right.
It even rhymes. Look at that. Strive to thrive in this Catholic life. So. Yeah.
And then, if you don't mind, I'll make a...
he's back.
What's going on? Sorry, we talk about
stuff and
things. Yeah, don't worry. Do you want to say, just say the word Batman, then it'll be good enough for this episode.
Batman.
There you go. We
had today's word is Batman. Colby found the stairs. He's really
today's episode brought to you by the letter B.
Which stands for Batman.
Stands for Batman.
I'll just do a shameless plug. Don't forget to check out the Catholicism in the Car podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, totally.
I would love it.
All right, Colby, we'll go back to the stairs.
The audio quality, because I'm recording in a car, is nothing like this. But hopefully you will enjoy the content.
It is way better than this. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, great. Awesome, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Maria said James Bond.
Yeah, I remember. I will say it. This has been the – I'm getting to it. Goodness gracious. This has been the Deus Vult podcast. I'm Father Dan Cale. Father Stephen Felice is over there at the stairs playing with a child. And this is my good friends Parker and Maria Zerba. Thank you so much again for coming on the show, guys. Listen to Catholicism in the Car. We'll try to put links in the description, and listen to the Deus Vult podcast anywhere you can find podcasts. Email us at deusvultpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram. God bless you, and as always, Parker, Maria,
Deus Vult.
Yeah.